A tall, slender nun appeared in the doorway. She was pale and seemed to float across the bathroom floor. She turned to the raven, seeking an explanation for the commotion. I could hardly take my eyes off her. The raven made a gesture from her cheekbone to her jaw, like a man shaving his whiskers. The new girls now laughed, too. My mother had bought that tube for me. They were not just laughing at me, they were laughing at her. I wanted to tell the nun that it was not funny. My mother could not read. How was she to know that she was buying shaving cream and not toothpaste? I saw the muscles of the tall nun's beautiful long neck tense, but she did not laugh. She glided toward me and pulled a small tube from her pocket. I am not trying that, I thought. I have had enough of the outsider's pastes. She took a drop from the tube, placed it on her own tongue, and smiled. After rinsing my brush, she put a strip of the paste on it. Mmm, she said. I trusted her smile, so I put it in my mouth. It was cool and refreshing, like the mints my father had once bought us at the Hudson's Bay Company. As I ran the brush across my teeth, I could see the tall nun in the mirror. She looked like a pale swan, long and elegant. Later, Agnes told me that her name was Sister McQuillan, and that she was in charge of all the other nuns. She would be the perfect woman to teach me how to read, but reading, as I discovered, would have to wait. Once we had finished cleaning ourselves, it was time to clean the school. We were separated into groups. I was lucky. I was put into Agnes's group. We were assigned to clean one of the classrooms. We wiped down the desks, the walls, and the floor with a harsh-smelling liquid that made our eyes water and ate at the skin on our fingers. After we had dusted, swept, and washed everything, we rubbed wax into the wood floor until it was as smooth and as slick as ice. Agnes and the other girls had fun slipping and sliding around on it, but my stockings were too worn on the bottoms for sliding. I perched myself in one of the small wooden desks to see how it would feel. Letters, like those from Rosie's books, decorated the walls of the classroom. I stared at them, trying to decipher what they might mean. Suddenly, the girls fell silent. I turned to see why. Whap! A stick came down on the desk I was sitting in. I jumped in my skin. The raven stood over me with a look that made it clear she did not approve of me sitting down. I scrambled to my feet. She shoved a dusting cloth in my hand and pointed to the rows and rows of books at the back of the class. The other girls were dismissed to get ready for dinner, but I had to stay. By the end of my first day, the only books I had touched were the ones I dusted. I hardly slept that night. The bed had a rickety frame that creaked every time I took a breath. Each girl's bed was as loud as mine, and the noise filled the vast space of the large room with a disjointed, foreign sound, unlike the sleepy, rhythmic breathing of my mother, father, and siblings with whom I had shared a tent since birth. Sobs also carried through the room. My eiderdown blanket was soft, but I missed the musky smell of furry hides, the comforting aroma of smoke drifting through the air, and the darkness of the tent, even in summer. The thin serge curtain above my bed did little to keep the midnight sun from penetrating the huge room. Gathering the blanket off my assigned bed, I crawled underneath it, squinted my eyes, and imagined that my father's pipe was glowing in the distance. They woke us very early the next morning, but my sleep had been almost as brief as the short-lived darkness. By the time the nuns entered the room, clapping their hands fiercely, I was dressed and seated on the edge of my bed. I was not about to let another minute stand between me and my chance to learn. However, all I was about to learn was what was to be done with their smelly buckets I had discovered in the stalls the night before. We called them honey buckets, but there was nothing sweet about a bucket that was used as a toilet. With extreme care, we hauled them down the stairs and across the schoolyard, where we dumped them in the river. When we returned, we were set to work cleaning the chicken coop. A long time passed before we were herded back upstairs and given a few minutes to attend to our hygiene. My stomach ached with hunger, and my mind ached for knowledge. I could not wait to go to Sister McQuillan's class and begin to read. After we were inspected for cleanliness, we were led in single file into a strange room that separated the boys' and girls' dormitories. It was filled with long benches instead of desks, but there were books placed along them. At last, I would learn to read. Standing at the head of the room was the priest who had taken my parents away the day before. I spotted Sister McQuillan in the front row, but she did not get up to teach us. Instead, the nuns came around and made us get down on our knees and hang our heads. It seemed like an odd way to learn anything. Egna saw my confusion and whispered to me in Inuvialuktun, "We are supposed to pray for our souls." I nodded my head and prayed to start class soon. My prayers were not answered. After kneeling, we were taken to eat a breakfast of soggy, bland, mushy oatmeal. Each bowl was sprinkled with a scant teaspoon of brown sugar, which hardly disguised the revolting, tasteless stuff. I wondered how Agnes, who was sitting next to me, could eat it with such enthusiasm. "You get used to it," she said, shrugging her shoulders. "Really? So, do we learn to read after breakfast?" Agnes put down her spoon and turned to face me. Her face was sad and sympathetic. "Oh, no. We will not begin classes until the ice freezes again in the fall." I stared at her, horror replacing hunger in my belly. My spirit sank like the stockings that slouched around my ankles. Why had I been so eager to come here? I thought of my sisters and cousins. They were still in Aklavik, nearly within shouting distance. I wanted to yell to them to wake my father and tell him to come and get me so that I could spend the day dancing and watching the games. "What do we do until then?" I asked her, fearing the answer. "We do chores and we play." I had spent so many days anticipating the thaw, and now I would spend my days scrubbing, gathering wood, and mending uniforms, impatiently waiting for the freeze.